Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Kuf Mem Aleph. Today's daf has been dedicated by the Asa family in memory of Hacham Baruch Defael Ben Miriam. Ruach Hashem Tanichim Began Eden. Amen. Today's daf is being studied the Alun Ishmat Avraham Ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tanuchenu Began Eden. Amen. We are starting on Kuf Mem Aleph Amud Rishon at the Mishnah. Hakash She'al Gabe Hamita Lo Yenaqne'enu Biyado Ela Menaqne'o Begufo. The Mishnah here was talking about straw that is mukseh, that was designated really for fuel purposes. Therefore it is mukseh on Shabbat. And it happens to be on the bed. So the Mishnah clearly says, since it's mukseh, one is not allowed to move the straw with his hands. Even if he wants to, let's say, flatten the straw on the bed to make it smooth and fluffy in order that he be able to sleep. However, since it's mukseh, he cannot directly handle the mukseh. So what does he do? The Mishnah says, Menarneo begufo. Meaning, the way that she explains, beketefav, which means with his shoulders, which means he lies down, and with his body, he's able to maneuver in order to get the straw to become flat and even. Now she tells us that this is called tiltul min hatzad. Tiltul min hatzad means indirect contact with the mukseh. After all, you're not moving it with your hand, you're moving it with your body. The only issue over here is that the Rosh asks a question on Dashi, that we know the rule is that tiltul min hatzad, indirect tiltul, is only permissible letzorech davar hamutar, if it's in order to serve something that is permissible. Here, you're indirectly coming in contact with the mukseh for the purpose of the mukseh, which means you want to straighten out the kash. Tiltul min hatzad is only permissible when it's for a heter. When you indirectly move a mukseh in order to get to something that's mutar, that's okay. But here it's tiltul min hatzad letzorech davar ha'isur. To that, the Rosh answers that there's two types of indirect movement of mukseh. One is indirectly moving it with your hand, meaning you're moving something mutar and let's say something else moves as a result of it. And then there's another type of tiltul called tiltul begufo, where you're moving it with your body. He says this is a case of indirect mukseh that you're moving with your body. After all, you're moving it with your shoulders and the rest of your body. So the Rosh holds tiltul begufo is even permissible letzorech davar ha'isur. And therefore, even though you're doing it for the sake of the kash, it is indeed permissible. So there's different levels of what's going to be permissible. This would be a case of tiltul begufo, with his body, and therefore, even though you're doing it to serve the straw, after all, you want the straw to become straightened out, it is still permissible. That's the way they understand the Rosh. But if this kash was designated before Shabbat for animal food, so therefore it's not mukseh at all, because you can feed it to animals. Or shaya alav kar, or let's say there was a pillow on the bed from before Shabbat, or sadin, or there was a sheet that was on the bed, minarneo biyado. Then already it shows that obviously the kash was designated for sleeping purposes, and therefore not designated for fuel, and therefore it's not going to be mukseh, therefore you're able to handle it even directly. Again, if you designated it for food for animals, not mukseh, you're allowed to move the animal for food on Shabbat, food of the animals. Furthermore, if you made the bed a bed, there's a pillow, there's a sardin on it, so clearly everything on the bed is an accessory for the bed. Therefore, they don't become mukseh, and they'll be able to move it directly on Shabbat.
Shta continues.
Machbes shel baale batin matirin aval lo kovshin.
Now we're talking about the olden day press. The press was used, obviously, to press garments in order to take out their creases. So we're talking about the press that they have in the homes. It's not a professional one. It's the one that people have in their homes. What exactly did it look like? So that she explains, it was basically, let's say, a wooden board on the bottom, and you had pegs that came out on the four corners of it, and you had a top board. On the top board, there were holes on the four corners, and these top board would fit into the pegs, and they would lower it down in order to press it on the clothes. And they would have a peg that they would clip on the sides in order to hold it. And depending on how much clothes they have in there, that's how much they would lower it, and they would put the peg there in order to keep it there. So the Mishnah tells us that the machbesh, the press of the Baalei Batim, the one that's known matirin, you're able to take out the peg in order to lift the board, the upper board, in order to take out the clothes on Shabbat, aval lo kovshim. But you're not allowed to put clothes in on Shabbat. Rashi says, dehainu tzorech chol, which literally means that since clothes cannot be pressed on Shabbat itself, it takes time. So if you're going to put clothes in the press, obviously you're doing it for the week. So that would be considered preparation on Shabbat for the chol. Now, the Aharonim really questioning Rashi over here. What does he have to say? It's sort of chol. Just say, you're fixing a garment. It's tikkun mana. I mean, you're not allowed to fix a garment on Shabbat. Putting a garment in, you're making a tikkun. What is this tzorech chol? So the Sfat they may want to explain that could be we're talking about a case where you lifted the press to take out clothes that were already done. And you're leaving some clothes in there. So these clothes already, they were already mitukan. You're not mitakening them on Shabbat. They're already mitukan from before. The Hiddush is that you can't reclose the press on the clothes that are already inside them, because that already would be considered preparing for chol. That would be preparing for the week. The Mishnah continues and says, "Veshel kovsin lo yigabo," but the professional press of the launderers already, you're not allowed to touch it, you're not allowed to deal with it at all, which means even to take out the pegs in order to lift up the top board to take out the clothes, even that's asur. Why? Because the launderer's press, as she says, they put the pegs in very tightly. And therefore removing the peg would be considered soter. It would be considered dismantling. And therefore, soter is one of the melachot on Shabbat, and therefore would be forbidden. Harambam learns a little different. He says that the launderer's press is mukseh mahmat kesaron kis. He said this is a very, you know, this precious item, and therefore on Shabbat, you're not allowed to deal with it at all because of the mukseh status. So that she learns, you can't move it, you can't deal with it. Why? Because if you're going to take out the peg, it's going to be considered soter. Whereas Rambam says, no, the whole gadget itself, the whole press itself, is considered mukseh mahmat hasaron ki. So those are the dinim of the Mishnah. The Mishnah concludes, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Imaya mutar me'erev Shabbat, matir et kulo veshomto. Which means, Rabbi Yehuda says, if let's say it was loose from before Shabbat, so that already matir et kulo veshomto, then you're already able to pull the peg out, because it was loose from before Shabbat, and then it falls out, then you can take out, because even by the machbesh of the korpsim, if it's loose, he already allows you to continue. So that's the dinim of the Mishnah. Amar Rav Nachman, the Gemara begins. Hai fugla. We're talking about now a radish. Now you know the configuration of a radish. It has a wide part to it, and then it narrows down to a point. Okay, the wide part, and then the point that it comes down to is called an oketz. So now we're going to discuss a radish that was in the ground from before Shabbat. It was not rooted in the ground. Already you took it out of the ground from before Shabbat, so we're not dealing with now uprooting something. You're just storing it in the ground. But the issue is, when you pull the radish, inevitably you're going to move some dirt. Now the dirt is mukseh. So this is indirect movement of dirt. So the question is it permissible or not? So what the Gemara is going to say is, depends how it's in the ground. Meaning, if let's say the wide part of the radish is face up, and the narrow part that comes to a point is in the ground, pulling the radish out of the ground is not going to move any dirt, because the wide part already is above the ground, and the narrow part is in its spot. You just pull it out, there for sure it's not going to be a problem. But let's say the radish is upside down. Let's say the wide part is in the ground, and just the orchids, the narrow part is face up. When you pull the orchids, in order to make room for the wide part of it to come out of the ground, it's going to dislocate some dirt. So the Gemara is going to say, in that case, it's going to be forbidden, because you're indirectly moving mukseh. So let's read that inside. Amar Ab Nachman, Hai Fugla, this radish. If the wide part is face up and the narrow part is down in the ground, shari, it's permissible. However, if the wide part is face down, so then already asir, so it's going to be asur. So comes the Gemara and says, Amar Abadabar Abba Amri Be Rav Tanina de Loked Av Nachman. Okay, we have an explicit Mishnah against Av Nachman. And which Mishnah is that? Our Mishnah. Hakash al gabe amita. We just said in our Mishnah, the straw that's on the bed, lo yenarne'enu biyado. While you're not allowed to move it directly, aval menarne'o begufo. You're allowed to move it indirectly. Now here, when you're pulling the radish out of the ground, at worst, you're moving the dirt indirectly. So therefore, the Gemara is saying, Rav Nachman, your deen is incorrect. Because you see clearly in the Mishnah, while you're not allowed to move mukseh directly, but indirectly, it is mutar. And therefore, here, I'm not even handling the mukseh bichlal, I'm touching the radish. Indirectly, the dirt is moving, so that shouldn't make a difference. And the Gemara continues, "V'mayah ma'achal behema." Of course, we said if it was ma'achal behema, if it was fit for food for the animals, or sheyah alaf karo sadin minaneo beyado, then already you can even move it directly. Shma mina, we can learn conclusively tiltul min atzad lashem tiltul shma mina. Conclusively, Rav Nachman is rejected, and therefore it would be permissible to move the radish regardless the way it's in the ground, because you're not coming in contact directly with the dirt. Just like in the Mishnah, they allowed you to move the kash indirectly. So Rav Nachman's deen is broken from the Mishnah, is refuted from the Mishnah. Now we go to a new deen. One of the melachot on Shabbat that is forbidden is the melacha of tohen. Tohen is grinding. Grinding means you take a solid and you crush it up into smaller pieces. Amar Rav Yehuda, hane pilpele. These peppers, medak chada chada. You're allowed to crush them one at a time. Bekata de sakina share, with the back of the knife. Which means you take the handle of the knife and you bang one pepper at a time. He's telling you that is permissible. Why? Because you're doing it in an abnormal manner. This is bishinui. Normally you crush with a grinder. Here you're taking the back of the knife, so that's considered already a shinui, and you're doing one at a time. So the Gemara says, tarte asir. But, you know, two at a time already is asur. I mean, they're only letting you do one pepper at a time. Rav Amar, kevan de mishane afilu tuva name. He says, once already you're making a shinui, you can even do more than one at a time. And that's really the way the halakha says that in this case you have actually, according to the halakha, two shinuim. Shinui number one, using the back of the knife, the handle. Shinui number two, you're doing it on the table, or you're doing it in a bowl. You're not crushing it in the designated vessel that's used for grinding. So therefore the rule by Tohen is going to be based on this Gemara. So long as you have two Shinuyim, Tohen becomes Mutar, which means the rabbis did not make the Gezerah of Tohen if you have two. Therefore, for example, if somebody would take a keli and use the bottom of it in order to crush garlic on Shabbat, he would take a clove of garlic, take a glass, for example, and bang the garlic with the bottom of the glass. That's a Shinui. And the second Shinui is you're banging it on the table. So therefore, that would be permissible. Of course, we're talking where you're eating it right away. It's for immediate consumption. So therefore, such tehina would be permissible. Comes the Gemara and continues. Amar Rav Yehuda, a new law. This law is going to discuss somebody that is going to bathe on Shabbat. Mm-hmm. We learned early in the Masechet that a river has a din of a Karmelit. Mm-hmm. Karmelit is a rabbinical domain. You're not allowed to carry 4 amot in a Karmelit. Furthermore, the area around the river is usually deemed as a Karmelit. So what's the issue? You're allowed to go into the water on Shabbat to bathe. Mm-hmm. The question is now coming out. Why? Because now you have an excessive amount of water on you. Now, when you have an excessive amount of water on you and you walk, it's considered carrying. So the Gemara is going to have to analyze now, how does he walk out of the water without carrying 4 amot in a karmelit? So Amar Rav Yehuda, man desache b'maya, a person that is bathing in the water. Lingiv nafshe b'resha, he has to see to it that he dries himself first, the hadad the sleek, and then he's able to walk out of the water. Dilma atel atuye dalir amot bekarmelit, because we're concerned he might come and carry 4 amot in the karmelit. So he has to figure out to put his towel close enough where he's not going to walk 4 amot and dry himself. So the Gemara says, if you're concerned about carrying 4 amot in the karmelit, when he walks down into the water, which means when he walks into the water, isn't he pushing the water? The mere fact that his feet are moving, so he's displacing water. So therefore, we should say that he can't walk into the water because he's moving water 4 amot. And we said that the yam is considered a karmelit. So forget about coming out of the water. Even going into the water is a problem. So the Gemara says, "Koho be karmelit lo gazru," which means this is, he's not directly moving the water. It's through his koach. So the rabbis did not make a gezerah when the movement is coming from your koach, which is indirectly in a karmelit, which is you can't carry directly something in your hand or on your body actually carrying it. The water on your body you're actually carrying. Here you're just through your kawa, as you're walking, you're displacing the water. In the karmelit, the rabbis did not make a gezerah, therefore you can walk down into the water. So all the rishonim discuss over here, the Beit Yosef included, so what does a person do in the rain? When it's raining outside, so automatically water's going to fall on him. So now what, you're going to tell me that he cannot walk in the street when it's raining? So the Beit Yosef wants to say that since the water is so minimal that's on the person, so the Hakamim were not gozer. Others want to say, the Primi Gadim says, because usually on the rain it doesn't fall so much on you, you're going to have the shi'ur of water that's subject to the isur of hotza'ah. The Mishnah Rab brings down because it's not the derech of hotza'ah bekach. The Taz comes along and has a different understanding. He says, bottom line, the rabbis, even if you had enough water, because sometimes there are downpours, and sometimes you do get drenched, but he said, since the rain comes suddenly, and you can't control it, so the rabbis didn't make a gezerah when it comes to rain. However, when it comes to going into the water, that was already under your control, so therefore you have to wait to dry off. Comes the Gemara and continues. Amar Abaye Betim Arav Yehuda. Next din. Tit She'al Gaber Raglo. Person has, let's say, mud or clay on his feet. Mekanho bekarka. So he's allowed to clean it off on the karka, on the ground, which means he rubs his foot on the ground in order to get the clay off of it. Ve'en mekanho bekotel. However, he cannot rub his foot against the wall. So the Gemara says, Amarava maitama bekotel lo. What's the reason why on the kotel you cannot rub your foot? Mishum de mehzi kebone. Because it looks like you're constructing. Because bottom line, how do you construct? You put teeth, you put clay on the wall. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Habinyan haklaahu. Because what kind of building is this? This would be considered the haklaah, an inferior building. Which means, who builds like that? You're putting the clay on the wall, this is going to make a gezah. Which means, this is really not considered, doesn't look like building. Especially the guy's not mitkavin. Right, the guy's not mitkavin to build. What type of gezerah is this over here? So the Gemara says, again, haklal means farmers. This is the way farmers build. Meaning it's an inferior type of building. Well, you can make a gezerah and building in such a way, putting your foot on the wall with teeth. Ela maraba mekanho bekotel ve'em mekanho bekarka. So the Rabbah says the opposite. To rub your foot against the wall, no problem. But on the ground, it's a problem. Why? Dilma atel ashvuye gumot. Because the concern is that when he's rubbing his foot in the ground, he might come and fill up holes. There might be some holes in the ground, and he might fill them up. Esfuyeh gumot on Shabbat is asur. So therefore, it is a problem. Comes the Gemara and says... Right, so that's the way that the Tosfot learns over here, that the Isur is that while he's wiping his foot on the ground, he might see that there's some holes in the ground over there, and he might end up coming to smooth them out with Kavanah. It's not that you're actually filling up holes when you're rubbing your foot on the ground. It's a Gezerah. While you're doing it, you might see holes and you might come to fill them up. Itmar, we have a statement, Mor Bered Ravina Amar. Echad zeh ve'echad zeh asur. So he says both are asur. On the wall and on the karka. The papa amar echad zeh ve'echad zeh mutar. And we have another rabbi, the papa comes along and says both are mutar. So the Gemara says, Lemor bered ravina b'may mekanhele. So quote the Mor bered ravina that says you can't rub it on the wall. And you can't rub it on the ground. So what are you going to do with the guy's teeth on his feet? What is he supposed to do? So the Gemara says, "Mekanhele bekora." If there's a beam that's coming out of the ground, so then you can wipe it on the beam itself. So you have no problem of looking like you're building, because you don't build like that on a beam, and you have no problem of asfuyeh gumot. Amar Rava. Rava gives another halakha. We know, and we learned several times, that there is what's called a mavui. Mavui is an alleyway, right? It's shared by the people that are living in the chatzerot, the courtyard surrounding the mavui. Now, in order to carry in a mavui, besides the fact that you need a shituf amongst all the members of the chatzerot, you also need a lehi. You need a pole at the end, at the entrance of the mavui, right by the reshut harabim, in order to remind everybody that, you know, the mavui ends here, and now the reshut harabim is, you know, beyond that, in order they don't come to carry from the mavui to the reshut harabim. So now Rava is going to teach us a law regarding carrying in a mavui. So he says, lo litiv inish apume de lehaya. A person is not allowed to sit by the opening of a mavui where the lehi is, and he, let's say, has something in his hand, meaning you can carry in the mavui, but what? Not flush at the entrance right by the lehi. Even though technically you're within, still in that area over there, you can't carry. Why? Dilma migandra lehefetz. Because we're concerned that what? That maybe the item will roll out. Guy's holding a ball, let's say. Guy's holding something, a non-mukse item picture. And he's sitting by the end. What's going to happen? It might fall out of his hand. It might roll beyond the mavui. And he might come to bring it back in. Again, he's not going to see the lehi because he's sitting right by it. So he's in the, you know, he's in that area. So we're concerned, since you're very close to the shoot to the beam, something might fall out and you might end up retrieving it. Now, of course, you cannot retrieve from the shoot to the beam to the mavui. Next law. Ve'amar Rava. Rava taught. Lo litzaded inish kuba. A kuba is a barrel. A person should not place a heavy barrel into the ground. Litzaded literally means to turn it, which means when you want to affix a barrel good, so you turn it, you know, back and forth in order that it's affixed firmly in the ground. Now, what's the isur? Why can't I take a barrel and put it in the ground and affix it properly on Shabbat? So he says, the reason is, Dilma ate la'ashvuye gumot, because he might come to, again, see holes in the ground, and he might come and smoothen them. Two different approaches how to learn. The Ramban understands that what? The Ramban understands the issue is going to be like this. That you're actually going to come and smoothen out because you want the barrel to sit straight. So if you're going to see that the ground is not level and there's a hole, you might come and smoothen the ground first before you actually put the barrel down. That's the way that Ramban learns. Maran learns differently. Maran learns it's a psikre sheh, it's an automatic. When you turn the barrel back and forth, it's inevitable that the ground is going to become level and smooth and the holes that are underneath are going to be filled up. So therefore, it is asur. Then we go to the next din. Ve'amar Rava, lo lihaduk inish udra, a person should not take flocking, that's like, material, let's say wool, bepuma de shisha, in the mouth of a bottle. Dilma ateli de sechita, because he might come to sechita to squeeze it. Now, the she tells us that we're talking about a moist piece of flocking. It's wet, right? So what is the concern over here? That you might take it, and when you're stuffing it into the to the opening of the keli, what's going to happen? Inevitably you're going to come and squeeze some of the water out. Now that she tells us we're talking about a bottle that has water in it. The only reason why he has to tell us that the bottle has water in it, he's just giving you an example why the flocking was wet in the first place. But really, the issue is not that there's water in the bottle itself. The issue is that the flocking is wet already, and even when you're squeezing it into the barrel, to the neck of the to the hole, what's going to happen? Some of the water is going to drip out. Now, what's the isur? Sehita. Now, sehita, which is squeezing, could be asur for one of two reasons. If it's water that's in the flocking, so then the isur is melaben, because that's whitening. How do you clean something? You put water and then you squeeze it. But let's say there was another liquid in the flocking, for example, wine or another beverage. So then the isur is also sehita, but not because of melaben. It's isur sehita that's similar to dash. Dash is removing, let's say, the kernel out of the chaff, right, where they bang it. So sehita is similar to that. When you're squeezing, you're removing the liquid out of the flocking. Now, it's not going to be the boon, because you don't whiten by squeezing wine out of a white material. So therefore, either the sehita, if it's water, it's be asur because of libun. If it's another liquid, it's sehita isur because of dash. Comes the Gemara and continues. Amar Rav Kahana taught tit shal gabe bigdo. Well, yeah, you have clay on one's garment. Okay, mekaskeso mebifnim ve'en mekaskeso mebachutz. Person wants to take the clay off the garment, so it says you could rub it from the inside, but not from the outside. Meaning, you could place your hand inside the garment and hold on to the garment from the inside with your fingers, and where the clay is, you're able to rub it against each other in order that the clay comes off. However, you can't do it from the outside. which means from the outside of the garment to take the two sides and rub it together to take it off, that's going to be asur. Rashi says, four lines from the bottom, mibifnim, delo muhammil talit hazuyekim labin, which means the issue over here is why should it be asur at all to take off the clay? Because you're cleaning the garment. Cleaning a garment is melaben, whitening. Now, it's not real melaben, as she says, because you're not using water. Well, so long as you're not using water, it's not the real melaben. So therefore, it looks like melaben. Why does it look like melaben? Only when you're doing it the normal way from the outside. But when you do it from the inside, that's not the normal way you clean the garment. Therefore, the hachamim did not gozer. So again, you have clay on the garment, the kaskes, to rub it from the inside of the garment, mutar. From the outside of the garment, asur. Why? Because it looks like melaben. It looks like you're whitening. Why isn't it actually whitening? Because you're not using water. Comes the Gemara and says, Metive, we have a question. Teach al gabe minalo. If you have clay on one's shoe, megarero begav sakin. So the way to get it off is you take the back of the knife and you take the clay off the shoe. Why can't you use the regular side of the knife? Because the issue is you might come to scrape off some of the leather of the shoe and smooth it out. And that's considered the isur of mimahek. So when it comes to clay on a shoe, you can only use the back of the knife because it's not going to take off any of the leather. But the Braita continues and says, V'she'al bigdo, but if you have clay that's on your garment, megarero b'siporin, you're able to take it off with your nail, meaning you take the sharpness of your nail and you just scrape it off. Ubelvad shelo yikaskes, so long as you don't rub it off. So what do you see? Rubbing it is asur. We just said if you do it from the inside, it's okay. Here they're telling you the only way it's permissible is how? By scraping it off. So the Gemara says, my love shelo yikaskes klal. And the fact that it says ubelvad shelo yikaskes, it sounds like at all. Not from the outside and not from the inside. Gemara says, la. Shelo yikaskes mibachutz, ela mibifnim. It just means they don't want you to rub it from the outside because that's the normal way. However, it would be permissible to rub it from the inside. So therefore, that is permissible. Now, there is a famous question here from Rabbi Akiva Eger in his Perush Gilyon HaShas. Later on, the Gemara is going to tell us that if a person has a talit and there's afar, there's, let's say, dust on the talit, so he's not allowed to shake it out. Because if he shakes it out, it's considered milabin. It's considered whitening the talit. Now over there, you're not putting any water. So how come over here, they're letting you be mekeskes mebifnim? Or they're letting you be megarer besiporin? How come you don't have an issue of milabin? And don't tell me there's no water, because later on there was no water when you're shaking out the talit, and still the Gemara said, asur. So Kiveg makes a difference. He says, over there, when you shake a talit away from its afar, it comes totally clean. The afar totally is removed. Here, even when you make a skes or you use the siporin, there's always a stain that remains. I mean, you're taking off the surface, but there's always a mark that is beneath, and that you can't take off. And therefore, it's not considered melaben. So that's the chiluk between afar and a talit, as opposed to that Gemara is the Kaman on Daf Kuf Mem Zayin Amud Rishon. And the Gilyon HaShas actually is by us. Okay, he brings that question and he actually leaves it in a tzarich ayun. The Shadet Ziyun gives that answer. In any event, the Gemara continues. Amar Abba, two lines on the bottom, Amar Abil Hazar, Amar Vianai. Megaririn min al hadash abalo yashan. Discussing over here, let's say you have a shoe, right, and the shoe has some, let's say, dirt on it, clay. So he says you're allowed to scrape the clay off a new shoe, but not off an old shoe. It seems the old shoe, when you scrape, the leather comes off. And therefore it's considered a mahek, because when you take the leather off, you're smoothing out that spot. Okay, so they want to make a difference in a new shoe and an old shoe. The Gemara says, Bema
Megarero. So you're telling me that a new shoe, it's permissible. It seems the new shoe is still hard. And you tell me it's permissible to scrape off, let's say, clay that's on the shoe. With what? So the Gemara says, Amar Babu, Begad Sakin. Which is even a new shoe, they don't let you use a regular sharp part of the knife, because it'll take off the leather as well. They only use the back of the knife, or the dull side of the knife.
Amar Le Hahu Saba.
It was an elder man, Zaken, and he said, Samedidach. He told them, delete what you just said. Which means the rabbi just said what? On an old shoe, asur. On a new shoe, permissible. Mm-hmm. So the old rabbi told them, delete your opinion. Samedidach. Mekameha detani de bihiya. In front of what we learned in the braita of Rav Chiya. En megardin. Lo min al hadash. It's asur whether it's on a new shoe or whether it's on an old shoe. Finish, clear, but you can never scrape off anything on a leather shoe. Why? Because you're worried it might take off the leather, which means even with the back of the knife, it also there's a chance that it's going to cause the leather to come off. Next din, velo yasuch et raglo shemen v'hu betoka min'al. It's forbidden to place oil on one's foot while it's in the shoe, or betoka sandal, or when it's in the sandal. Why? Because the oil now is going to go in the shoe, obviously, and that's going to be considered like you're tanning the shoe. How do they tan leather? They put chemicals, salt, oil, etc. So to have your foot in a shoe and now pour oil on your foot, that's tantamount to tanning leather on Shabbat, and therefore it's forbidden. Haval sachet raglo shemen. You could pour oil on your foot first, umaniach betoka min'al betoka sandal, and then you're able to put your foot in the shoe. When your foot is in the shoe, you can't put the oil. However, to put the oil on your foot first and then to stick it in the shoe, so that is permissible. Vesach kol gufo shemen. For that matter, you're allowed to anoint your whole body with oil. Umitagel al gabe katablaya. And you're able to roll on a leather mat. Now, even though by rolling on the mat, you're going to now, you're oiling it, so that's okay. You have nothing to worry about. Certainly, you wouldn't be able to pour the oil directly on the leather mat. If you're allowed to put oil on your body on Shabbat, there's no issue in that. It's liquid. And then you can put it on your body and then roll on the leather. Amar of Chizda, lo shanu ela lesachsecho. So the Gemara says, that which we said, you could put oil on your legs and then put it in the shoe, that's only where your intention is to shine the shoe. Your intention is not to do any type of tanning to the shoe. All you want to do is put some oil on your foot, stick it in the shoe in order to get it to become a little shiny. So the Gemara says, Aval le'abedo asur. But if your intention is to tan the shoe, even that way is going to be asur. So the Gemara says, La'abedo peshita. That goes without saying. If your intention is to tan the shoe, then that is going to be asur. Vetu lesachsecho mi'ika man deshari. Even to shine the shoe. Anybody going to tell me you can go out of your way on Shabbat to shine the shoe? Shining a shoe on Shabbat is also forbidden. Why? That she says, gizirah, that you might come to tan the shoe. So now we have a question. You told me that you could put oil on your foot and then stick it into the shoe. So long as what? Your kavanah is for just shining the shoe. You know what I mean? That should be asur also. Sihsuah, because you might come to mehabed. So what were you talking about when you said you could put oil on your foot to put it in the shoe? So the Gemara says, Ela I itman hachi itman. Say it like this. Amar of Chizda, lo shanu ela shi'ur lesachsecho. Which means we're talking about not your intent. We're talking about how much oil you're putting on your foot. If your intention is what? Not to shine the shoe and not to tan the shoe. You just want to put oil on your shoe, on your foot. So what's the deen? So long as you put less oil, not enough to even shine it, then already you're allowed to put that amount and stick it in. I'm sorry. Lo shu l'sachsecho. I take it back. You're only allowed to put up to the amount of shi'ur shi'suah. Let's say, for argument's sake, to shine a shoe, it's 4 ounces of oil. So you could put 4 ounces of oil on your foot. Aval shi'ur le'abedo asur. But you can't put the shi'ur of tanning. Let's say the shi'ur of tanning is 10 ounces. So you can't put 10 ounces of oil on your foot. You could put 4 ounces of oil on your foot. And as she points out clearly, this is only talking where your kavanah is not even to shine. If your kavanah was to shine the shoe, it's going to be asur. Why? Gezerah that you might come to tan it. So then what's the case that's permissible to put oil on your foot and then put it in the shoe, where you're putting the shi'ur that normally takes to shine the shoe, but your kavanah is not even for that? Meaning, you put 4 ounces of oil, let's say, on your foot, but why are you putting it there? Because you want to oil your foot. Nothing to do with the shoe. But if you were to put that shi'ur, and then have kavanah in order to shine it, it would be asur. Why? Gezerah, because you might come to do the deoraita of tannings. That's the only way you could put oil on your feet, and then directly place them in the shoe itself. Shi'ur sihsuah. Beli kavana l'sachseyach. Tanu Rabbanan, we have a braita. Lo yetze katan b'min'al gadol. A person with a katan, a small person, meaning he has a small foot, he's not to go out on Shabbat with a big shoe. That doesn't fit him properly. Why? It's going to fall off, and he might come to carry it. Aval yotzehu b'haluk gadol. He could wear a big shirt, because even though it's oversized on him, we're not worried that it's going to fall off or that he's going to take it off. Because no one takes off their shirt in the public domain. A shoe, he'll take off and walk barefoot. So therefore, an oversized shoe, asur. Oversized shirt, mutar. Ve'lo titze isha b'min'al merupat. The lady is not allowed to go out on Shabbat with a shoe that is torn. Again, why? She's going to be embarrassed because the shoe is torn, and she might take it off and come to carry. Ve'lo tachlotzmo. Nor can you perform the ceremony called halitza with a shoe that is torn. V'im halitza, halitzata kesherah. But if you use the torn shoe in the halitza, b'di'avad, it is okay. V'en yotzin b'min al hadash. And it is forbidden for a person to go out with a new shoe on Shabbat. Now, what are we talking about over here? Again, in the olden days, the shoes, they would wear them a few times to make sure that they fit them properly. It's very common what happened, if you wear a new shoe on Shabbat, you realize in the middle of your walking that really it doesn't fit good. And then what are you concerned about? You might take it off. So therefore you have to try on the shoes from before Shabbat to make sure that they fit properly. Then you can wear them on Shabbat. So the Gemara says, "Be'ez min'al amru." What are we talking about? What type of shoe are we talking about? The min'al shel isha. We're talking about the lady's shoe, which means a lady is more vain. And if the shoe doesn't fit perfectly on her, she's going to take it off. A man, he doesn't care if the shoe is not perfectly fitting, he doesn't care how it looks. And therefore, he'll wear it. So a man could wear a new shoe on Shabbat that wasn't fitted. However, a lady cannot, because since she's vain, she might take it off and carry it. Tane bar kapara. Lo shena ela shelo yatza bo sha'a chada be'ojom. It's only talking where she didn't wear it for a time from before Shabbat. Because then we're concerned, why it might not fit, she might take it off. Aval yatz'ah bo me'erev Shabbat mutar. But of course, if she wore it from before Shabbat, mutar, because she knows already the size. Tani hada. We have a statement. Braita. Shomtim min'al me'al gabeh imus. What is the imus? Imus is that metal form that the cobbler makes shoes on. I mean, it's a metal piece, looks like a shoe, and the cobbler sticks the shoe on it and he uses to work on that metal. That item is called an imus. So it says in the Braita, you're allowed to take a shoe off the imus on Shabbat. V'tanya idach, we have another Braita that says, in shomtim, you're not allowed to take it off. Make up your mind. So the Gemara says, "La kasha, no question." Har bili aezer, har banan.
Different opinions. Rabbi Eliezer Rabbanan. What's the opinions? The Tanan. We have a Mishnah. Min'al she'al gabe imus. If you have the shoe that's on the form, we'll call it Rabbi Eliezer Mitahir. Rabbi Eliezer says the shoe is tahor, meaning so long as it's still on the imus, it's an unfinished product because the cobbler is still working on it, and therefore it's not considered a keli. And since it's not considered a keli, it's tahor. It does not receive tum'ah, and therefore it's going to be mukseh on Shabbat, because it's not considered a shoe so long as it's on the imus. It's a work in progress. The rabbis come along and say it's tameh, which means even though it's on the imus, it's still considered a shoe, and therefore it can receive tum'ah, therefore it's not mukseh, therefore you can take it off on Shabbat. So the Gemara says, the Gemara wants to analyze. Now we go back to a machloka that we learned by mukseh. Rava's opinion was the amar. Let's go review. We had a case where you have a klish melachtol isur. That's a vessel that's primary function is for isur. Let's take a practical example. This imus, or this form, this metal form, obviously is a keli. That's primary function is what? Isur, for making shoes. Obviously you can't make shoes on Shabbat. Now Rava learned that a kli shemelachtol isur, you could move it on Shabbat, the sorech gufo, for its function, meaning to do a permissible function with it, or the tzorech mekomo, or if you need the place. So now, how are you going to take the shoe off this imus? You're going to have to move the imus. So according to Rava, no problem. Because moving it is a kli shemelachtol isur, the tzorech, because you need the place where this imus is. Because what's the place over there? The shoe. The only way to get the shoe is you got to pull sometimes the imus. You need that spot where the imus is, right? Why do you need that spot? Because to get to the shoe. So according to the Rava that says, at least shemelachto liisud, it's permissible to move the tzorech mekomo. Beautiful. That's how you can take off the shoe. However, ela la'abaye, but according to Abaye, he said, you're not allowed to move it, which is even if you need its place, you can't move it. So according to Abaye, how you taking the shoe off the imus? The imus is a klisha melachto le'isur. According to Abaye, tzorech mekomo is asur. How could you get the shoe off? According to Rava, no problem. Why? Tzorech mekomo. However, according to Abaye, what are you going to say? So Gemara says, how come I ask Iran berafui? So you have to say, according to Abaye, where the shoe is on the imus loosely, and therefore you don't have to move the imus. All you do is have to, you know, move the shoe a little, click the shoe off, and it'll fall off. It's not on it tightly. Detanya, because we have a braita. Rabbi Yehuda omer, imaya rafui mutar. Rabbi Yehuda taught, if it was loose, it's permissible. Oh, so now we have a question. Now it's mashma, that it's only permissible if it's loose. So the Gemara says, tama de rafui. The braita is saying it's only permissible because it was loose. Ha lo rafui lo. But if it's not loose, it's a problem. Hani ala Abaye. Now we go the other way. That's good according to Abaye Dama, Davashimatoli Sula Surgufo Mutasurumikomo Asur Shapir. According to Abaye that says Klishmatoli Sula Surumikomo Asur, that's why the Braita says it has to be loose, in order that you can just take the shoe off. Ela Lirava, Damar Ben Surgufo Ben Surumikomo Mutar. But according to Rava that says they even allowed to move a Klishmatoli Sula Surumikomo, my Iriya Rafui. Why the bride have to say that the shoe has to be loose? Afilu lo rafui nameh. Even if it's not loose. And now we're going the other way. We have a bride that says dafka where the shoe is loose. What for? According to Rava, does it have to be loose? No, you can even move the imus from the shoe, because you're moving a klish matol yisur lesorech. Mekomo. The bride, why do you have to tell me loose? Second bride says, no. Ha hui, the Rabbi Yehuda. That is going according, that statement of Rabbi Yehuda, Mishum de Rabbi Eliezer hu. That's going according to the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. De Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda omer Mishum Rabbi Eliezer, imaya rafui mutar. Meaning, when do we make a difference in the Braita? If it's loose or not, that's going according to the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. Let's review. Rabbi Eliezer held, as long as the shoe is on the imus, the shoe is not a shoe. Right? Why? It's a work in progress. It's not finished yet. And therefore the shoe is mukseh. And therefore you can't move it on Shabbat. The whole story.
Right.
Oh, so in the Eliezer, the Hiddush is like this. But if the shoe already is loose, that already shows that what? That the kavur is finished. When did he say it's not finished? Only when the shoe is still tightly on the imus. That already, still working on it. The Hiddush is according to him, once the shoe is loose, then already we consider it a finished product. It's a keli, and even according to him, it would be permissible to take it off on Shabbat. But according to Hachamim, whether it's loose or not, bottom line, it's not mukseh, and you have no problem. So the loose issue is only in the din according to Rabbi Eliezer. Odd pam. Rabbi Eliezer held what? If it's on the imus, tahor. It's not a keli. To that, the Braita said, oh, but if it's rafui, it's okay. What does rafui do? Rafui shows already, it's finished. It's loose. It's coming off the imus any second. So in that case, even the Rabbi Eliezer will agree that it is considered a shoe and it is non-mukseh. Hadran alach tolim. And now we begin the 21st perek, perek notel. The Mishnah says, notel adam et beno ve'ebin biyado. A person is allowed to carry his son on Shabbat, even though his son is carrying a rock. Even though the rock is mukseh, you're allowed to carry your son. Obviously, we're talking about in a chatzer, in the place where you're able to carry, even though he is carrying the rock. Ve'kalkala, and you're allowed to carry a basket, even though there's a rock in the basket. For that matter, you're allowed to carry terumah tehora, and it's mixed with terumah teme'ah. You're allowed to carry it together in a basket. Now obviously you would not be allowed to carry or move terumah teme'ah, because terumah teme'ah is no purpose, and therefore it would be mukseh. Certainly terumah tehora is permissible. The hadush is here where it's mixed, so you're allowed to move the mixture on Shabbat. The Mishnah continues. Again, I read on the first line of the Mishnah. Or for that matter, if it has, let's say, terumah with chodin, which is a regular food, that's not even kodesh. If it's together, you're allowed to carry it and move it on Shabbat. Rabbi Yehuda omer, af ma'alin et hamedumah be'hadume'ah. Rabbi Yehuda has a chidush. We have a law that says like this. If you have terumah, sorry, if you have chodin, chodin is regular food that anybody can eat. Okay, let's say you have 100 se'ah of chulin, of regular food, and you have one se'ah of terumah that fell in. Now what's the din? It's 100 against one of terumah. So the law is, it's batel. The terumah becomes batel in the 100. You following? Which is normally now, Israel cannot eat this mixture, because there's terumah in there. The Hiddush says, no, if it's 100 against one of terumah, batel. That mixture is called medumah. Medumah means it's mixed. However, there's one condition. You have to take one se'ah out. Because there is a se'ah of terumah somewhere in there. You don't know which one. You can't eat the mixture until you take one se'ah out and you put it on the side. The Hiddush of Rabbi Yehuda is, you're allowed to fix that mixture on Shabbat. So until you take that one se'ah out, you can't eat it. So the bottom line, there's a piece of the Kohen in there, there's a piece of the Kohen's food in there. So the Hiddush of Rabbi Yehuda is as following. Af ma'alin et hamedumah. You're allowed to take out one se'ah from the mixture, be'ahadu me'af, one out of 100. So obviously the Hiddush is that we're not going to be considering it metakin. Because Baman, you fix the food over here.
Kamashvan Rabbi Yehuda says it is not considered metaken. Comes the Gemara and says, Amar Rava. Rava gives us some halachot now. Hotsi tinok hai. Let's say on Shabbat, you removed a live baby. The child was alive. Vekis talui besavaro. And he has a wallet around his neck. Hayav mishum kis. So you're going to be hayav because of the wallet. We will see why. Tinok met. If the baby is dead, vekis talui besavaro, and he has a wallet around his neck, patur. You're patur for everything. Now we'll analyze. Tinok hay vekis talui besavaro. If he's alive, the child, and he has the wallet around his neck, hayav mishum kis. He's hayav because bottom line you carried a wallet. What about the child? So Gemara says, "Vide hayav nami mishum tinok." What do you mean? You carried a child in the public domain. Rava ke Rabbi Natan svira le. We're following Rabbi Natan's opinion that says, "Be'amar hay noseh et atzmo." Right? We learned early in the Masechet that there's no isud deoraita on carrying somebody that's alive, because the person that's alive carries himself, and therefore, when you're carrying a live baby with a wallet around his neck, what did you carry, minat Torah? The wallet. The child already, we say, hay no se tatzlo. So then we're going to be hayav de oraita on the wallet. So the Gemara says, v'liptil kis tegebe tinok. Why didn't you say the wallet becomes batel, becomes secondary, or becomes negated to the baby? Why? Where do we ever say such a thing? So Gemara says, Milo tenan. Didn't we learn? Etahai bemita. On Shabbat, if you carry a live person in a bed, patur afalamita. You patur on the live person because haino se tatzmo. And the Gemara said earlier, you patur even on the bed. You're carrying him in a stretcher. Why you patur on the stretcher? Shamita tefilalo. Because the bed becomes an accessory to the person, and therefore it's part of the person. And therefore, just like you patur on the person, you patur on the bed. So say the same thing over here. Just like you patur on the tinok, you patur on the wallet. Gemara gives a simple hiluk. Mita legabe hai mevatele. Yeah, a bed serves as an accessory to the person that's on it, and therefore becomes batel to the person. However, kis legabe tinok lo mevatele. A wallet does not become an accessory to the child, which means even though the child might play with it, but it's not become part of the child. A bed serves the person that's on it. And therefore we say it becomes part of him. Just like you patur on the fellow, you patur also on the accessories, the stretcher. Here, when you're carrying the child, he's got a wallet around his neck. Yeah, he's playing around with it. But that's not an accessory to the child. And therefore you're going to be hayav on the wallet. So comes the Gemara and says, now we go to the other case. Tinok met, 3 lines from the bottom, if the child was dead, v'talui lo besavaro, v'kis talui besavaro, he has a wallet around his neck, patur. Now let's analyze. Why should he be patur over here? There's no chay noseh tatzmo. The tinok is dead. It's dead weight. According to everybody, when you carry something that's dead weight, should be hayav. So the Gemara says, "V'li hayav mishum tinok." He should be hayav because of the tinok. Rava k'Rabbi Shimon svirale v'amar kol melacha she'en sarich legufa patur ale. We learned several times already the opinion of Rabbi Shimon that says to be hayav melacha, it has to be a melacha that's similar to the melachot that were done in the Mishkan. However, a melacha she'en atzricha legufa, which we'll interpret that again, you patur on such melachot. Why? Because that's not like the melachot that were done in the Mishkan. How did Rashi learn that? Rashi learned the melachot in the Mishkan were done as a positive melacha, constructive melacha. For example, they needed to take the planks from one place to bring them to another place because they wanted them in that place in order for them to build the Mishkan. So only such type of carrying is hayav, where it's for a constructive purpose. Here the child died. The carrying over here is not constructive, it's reactionary. Which means, the way that she said, you'd rather the child didn't have to die in the first place, that you didn't have to carry, which means
You don't really want to carry the child out. You have no choice now. The child died, so now you have to carry. So it's a reactionary milacha that you wish you didn't have to do in the first place. So therefore, such a milacha is considered a milacha she'en atzidicha ligufa. You're not doing it for the hotzah itself. Over there in the Mishkan, you wanted to take something for point A because you wanted it at point B. Here, it's not that you want it necessarily at point A, you just want to get rid of it, let's say, out of the house because it's Masriyah. You wish you didn't have to do it in the first place. So therefore, in this case over here, you're carrying the child. He died. Carrying a mit is a melacha she'ena tzidicha legufa. So a melacha she'ena tzidicha legufa is going to be patus, so you're not going to be hayav on the mit. Why? Because the mit is considered melacha she'ena tzidicha legufa. The only question is, what about the wallet? He has a wallet around his neck. You want to tell me it's a melacha she'ena tzidicha legufa on the body? But what about the wallet that he's carrying with the child? So that she tells us over here, the Hiddush. And as she says like this, it's three lines on the bottom. V'kis, she'ayat talui b'savaro l'sahayek bo. Right, the father put a kis around the kid's neck originally so the kid could play with it. Agav mirereh. The child, the father now is so embittered. I mean, his child died. Mevatele legabeti nok shemet. He already negates it as part of the child. At that point, the wallet means nothing to him. And therefore, the wallet is considered part of the child. And therefore, since it's part of the child, just like you patur on the child, it becomes like an accessory almost to the child, because the father doesn't care about the money at that point.